but we are his workmanship, created in the Messiah, Yeshua, unto good works, which Jehovah has before ordained that we should walk in them. In other words, it is by grace that he saved us. It's not that we got saved by doing some work, but by grace he saved us so that we can do some work, because we are his workmanship, and this workmanship was established before the foundation of the world. Every person in the earth is Jehovah's. You're either going to work for him or you're going to work for some other entity. And here's the thing. Everybody is working. You're either working for the dark side or you're working for the kingdom of Jehovah. You're either walking in light or you're walking in darkness. That's just the way it is. So everybody is working for him, and you can tell who a person is working for by their what? Their works. Either they are works of flesh, or they are the fruit of the Spirit manifesting. Either we are walking by Spirit, or we're walking in the carnal, we're walking in the flesh, and we are his workers. You and I are his workers. Our first and foremost work is kingdom work. Kingdom work is far greater than whatever other work you do. It's greater than your business, it's greater than your employment, it's greater than the work you do around the house, it's greater than anything you do. Why? Because he saved us for work.
Shalom, saints, and welcome to our verse-by-verse study of the book of Exodus. I'm your host and teacher, Arthur Bailey. Miracle after miracle performed by Moses and Aaron did little to cause or convince Pharaoh to release the children of Israel so that they can go and serve Jehovah. Pharaoh's heart was hardened to the point that he would not listen to the counsel of those around him. Pharaoh would not relent, even when they described the miracles being performed by Moses and Aaron as, "This is the finger of God." Despite being powerless to compete, Pharaoh continued to defy the command of the Most High to let Israel go. Join us as Jehovah raises the stakes and demonstrates his power in the sight of Pharaoh. The manifestation of Jehovah's power caused Pharaoh's household and the households of the Egyptians to suffer. However, the Most High protected his people Israel in the midst of the suffering Egyptians. Today's study title is A Sign for Pharaoh. So, let's study.
The teaching, as we're going to be looking at here tonight, again, it's the book of Exodus. We are in the 8th chapter, and we're going to pick up where we left off in verse number 20, but I want to do a quick recap, because here we're about to enter into the fourth plague, where Moses is performing a miracle in Aaron before Pharaoh and the magicians, the wise men, and those sorcerers that he have. Now, after these miracles have been performed, it doesn't seemed to convince Pharaoh to release the children of Israel. And so Jehovah is sending Moses to Pharaoh again. Now, what has happened in the last teaching, we talked about how Pharaoh hardened his own heart. There was the time where Jehovah hardened Pharaoh's heart, but Pharaoh's heart, as we pointed out, was already hardened, because when Moses appeared to Pharaoh for the first time, Pharaoh made it clear that he didn't know this Jehovah. And so with that said, Moses is unable to convince Pharaoh. But this last miracle that Moses did, even though Pharaoh's heart was hardened, the magicians come to the realization that they were no match for this God of Moses. They even made the statement that what they had just witnessed was the finger of God because they could not do it. And yet, when they told Pharaoh this, Pharaoh, this is the finger of God, man, let these people go. Pharaoh refused to listen to his own counsel. He's got these people there for the sake of counseling him, and yet, because of his own stubbornness, his own hardness of heart, he refused to listen to the counsel that he has around him. And so now, the Almighty is about to up the ante. He's about to really drive home his point to Pharaoh and to demonstrate his power in such a way to where it's unmistakable. Moses was informed by Jehovah that he would serve him on Mount Sinai. And if you remember, when Moses was on the backside of the desert, he saw this bush, he saw this flame, come to find that it was an angel who appeared as a flame of fire, and he appeared in this bush. And so Moses was drawn, and after communicating with Jehovah, Jehovah told Moses that this is the sign that you will know that I'm with you. He says, I will be with you, and this will be a token or a sign unto thee that I have sent you. When you have brought forth the people out of Egypt, you shall serve me on this mountain. And so Father was saying that one, Moses was to go into Egypt, bring the people out of Egypt, and they would serve him. They will work for him on this mountain. We know that when Moses eventually get there, and we'll see that as we go forth in Exodus, that now Moses spends an enormous amount of time up in this mountain that the Almighty had appeared to him after he bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. We looked at that word serve. It means to work. To work. That they would work and serve. Now, understand that Pharaoh has taken the people of Jehovah and now making the people of Jehovah serve him. They are workers. They are slaves. They are bond servants. And Pharaoh has taken, he has usurped, he has taken Jehovah's people as if they were his people. And Father now is sending Moses saying, no, these are not your people. You need to let them go. You're making them work for you, but I'm wanting them to work for me. And Pharaoh is saying, no. However, Father now has to convince Pharaoh that he's going to have to let the people go. From that point forward, when Moses addressed Pharaoh, he said so that the people could go and serve Jehovah. And each time Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh, Father told them to tell the Egyptians or tell Pharaoh what he was going to do as far as the plagues were concerned. So every plague that took place in the land of Egypt was announced. It wasn't hidden. It wasn't a mystery. It was announced. Moses went in the presence of Pharaoh and says, Pharaoh, let my people go. This is what's going to happen if you don't. And so every plague that took place in the land of Egypt, Pharaoh, his magicians, his sorcerers, his wise men, they knew what was about to go down because it was announced. I suspect that after a while, especially with this last plague, that the magicians recognized this was the finger of God. Now, if the wise men were wise, then they would have to conclude that, okay, when Moses is coming here and announcing, after he leaves, it happens. From that point forward, they may have warned their family and friends what was coming. And we're going to see this play out as we go through these next few chapters. In verse 19, it says, then the magicians said unto Pharaoh, says Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. And Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he hearkened not unto them, as Jehovah had said. So Pharaoh is not listening to Moses. Pharaoh is not listening to Aaron, who's speaking for Jehovah. And now Pharaoh is not listening to the magicians who up until this point was able to duplicate what Moses had done, but could not duplicate this last miracle. The warning would have given the Egyptians opportunity to ready themselves or prepare. And I also suspect that at some point, although Pharaoh's heart was hardened, the Egyptians who had suffered all the prior plagues, their hearts began to turn toward Jehovah, or the God of the Hebrew people. So if I'm watching this, if I'm an Egyptian, and I'm setting you all up, because when the people finally leave, it's not just the Israelites who left. When the people finally leave Egypt, it was not just the Israelites who left. Now, the Bible doesn't tell us, it just tells us that there is a multitude that was not numbered, a mixed multitude. It doesn't say the nationalities or the races or the ethnicity of the people who left Egypt. It just tells us that there was a mixed multitude that left Egypt when the Israelites left Egypt. And I suspect that they left Egypt with the Israelites because they had seen the finger of God, the power of the Most High, the demonstration of his power in dealing with Pharaoh, and they'd come to the conclusion that the Israelites' God would be theirs. And we'll see how this play out as we go forward. Verse 20, and Jehovah said unto Moses, rise up early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh. And then he tells him where he's going to be. He says, lo, he cometh forth to the water. Now, the Nile is a long river. And of course, I suspect the palace was close. Pharaoh's palace was close to the water because we know that Pharaoh's daughter came to the water. And there they found the baby Moses in the basket. And now Pharaoh, this is the second time, or at least the second time, where Moses meets Pharaoh by the water. So it seems as if Pharaoh had a habit of going down to the water, and why he went down there is not yet revealed in this passage. But Father says he's coming forth to the water and say unto him, thus saith Jehovah, let my people go. Why? So that they may serve me. Now, what Father does here with the Israelites is the same thing he's doing with us. The fact of the matter is that when he puts his name on you, just like he put his name on the children of Israel, then that means that the people of Israel's service was to him. They was to him. And even though they may have had their occupations, they may have had their skills, their abilities, their talents, their professions, their first order of service was to Jehovah. Jehovah did not deliver the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt so that they can go and do their own thing. He delivered them that they may serve him. Everyone who comes into relationship with the Almighty must understand that we become servants of the Most High. That means we become workers. Now, Paul makes it clear to us that we are his workmanship. His workmanship. And I'm going to deviate just a little bit, but I certainly think it'll be worth it in Ephesians chapter 2, where it talks about we are saved by grace. We're saved by grace, but we're saved for a purpose. We're saved for a purpose. And in verse 8, it says, for by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. And that's where people like to stop. not of works, lest any man should boast. In other words, we're saved by grace and we don't have to do any work. There's no work involved. Any work that is associated would now not be grace. Well, you are saved by grace through faith, or saved by grace through faith, not of works. But the next verse, verse 10, for we are his workmanship. For we are his workmanship, created in the Messiah, Yeshua, unto good works, which Jehovah has before ordained that we should walk in them. In other words, it is by grace that he saved us. It's not that we got saved by doing some work, but by grace he saved us so that we can do some work, because we are his workmanship, and this workmanship was established before the foundation of the world. Every person in the earth is Jehovah's. You're either going to work for him or you're going to work for some other entity. And here's the thing. Everybody is working. You're either working for the dark side or you're working for the kingdom of Jehovah. You're either walking in light or you're walking in darkness. That's just the way it is. So everybody is working for him, and you can tell who a person is working for by their what? Their works. Either they are works of flesh, or they are the fruit of the Spirit manifesting. Either we are walking by Spirit, or we're walking in the carnal, we're walking in the flesh, and we are his workers. You and I are his workers. Our first and foremost work is kingdom work. Kingdom work is far greater than whatever other work you do. It's greater than your business, it's greater than your employment, it's greater than the work you do around the house, it's greater than anything you do. Why? Because he saved us for work. And so he's saying to Moses, you're making my people work for you. Let them go so that they can serve me, so that they can work for me. If you don't let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies upon you and your servants and upon thy people and into thy houses, and the houses of the Egyptians shall be full of swarms of flies, and also the ground whereon they are. Who's the they? Because this now is where the Almighty begins to make a distinction between the Egyptians and where they live, and the Israelites and where they live. And he makes two statements in this passage. Here's one, or three, but this is a run-on, as we're going to see. And also the ground whereon they are. Goshen is going to be protected from these plagues. And for the first time, Jehovah makes a distinction between the land where the Egyptians lived and the land where the Israelites lived. And he makes a distinction or separation between the land of Goshen and the Egyptians. This is clear. It's the first time he does it. Now, some wants to make the argument that all of the plagues was, you know, Goshen was separated, the Israelites were separated, but the Bible doesn't say that. And now there is a distinction, verse 22, chapter 8. He says, and I will sever. In other words, he's going to set apart. He's going to distinguish. He's going to separate. I will sever in that day the land of Goshen in which my people dwell. And what does he say? That no swarms of flies shall be there. Now, this is the first time, the first plague where he makes it clear there will be no swarm of flies in Goshen. There will be no plague in Goshen. That no swarms of flies shall be there. To the end, thou mayest know that I am the Lord in the midst of the earth. And so he's making a distinction. He severs, again, that word severs is, if you look at the usage, separated, wonderfully set apart, to be distinguished, to mark out. He's saying the land of Goshen, the geography of Goshen, the ground of Goshen will not be affected by this plague. Not only do Father make a distinction between the ground, but also between the people. What does he say? And I will put a division between my people and your people. So now he makes it clear. I'm going to put a division between my people and your people. Again, this is the fourth plague. This is the first time he does it. And as we go forth, we're going to see where he makes a distinction, but in some cases he doesn't. He warns. What's interesting is that this division is a Hebrew word which means ransom, to redeem. But it also means to divide. And so what is he saying here? He says, I'm going to ransom, redeem, divide my people from your people. Tomorrow shall this sign be. So what is he saying here? The sign would be the flies would be among the Egyptians, but not among the Israelites. That would be the sign. Now, the flies is going to be all over the land of Egypt, but the flies will not affect Goshen. And this is what he's saying. Verse 24. And Jehovah did so. And there came a grievous swarm of flies into the house of Pharaoh and into his servants' houses and into all the land of Egypt. The land was corrupted by reason of the swarm of flies. In other words, they were everywhere. They covered everything. And Pharaoh called for Moses and for Aaron and said, go ye sacrifice to your God. Where? In the land. In the land. You can go, you can sacrifice, but you do it in Egypt. Pharaoh was willing to let the people sacrifice, but they had to sacrifice in the land of Egypt and not leave the land of Egypt. And of course, Moses refused. Moses said the sacrifice would be an abomination to the Egyptians. Now, this is not the first time we're hearing this, because it appears that the Egyptians see the animals and the shepherds as an abomination. That's what it seems. However, Pharaoh, that was in the time of Joseph, told Joseph to select individuals from among his family and for them to take care of his cattle, to take care of his beasts. And so there were animals, as we're going to see even in the plague that is about to come after these, where the Egyptians had animals. They had various beasts of burdens. They had bulls and rams and other identifiable beasts. But here we see Moses is saying sacrifice would be an abomination. And then he goes further and says, and Moses said, it is not meet so to do so, for we shall sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians to the Lord our God. Lo, shall we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes? And will they not stone us? So now, it's not clear what Moses is saying, but it is clear if you understand what Moses is saying. What Moses is saying is, if we sacrifice the animals that we're going to sacrifice, the Egyptians are going to see us sacrifice these animals, and they're going to want to kill us. Why? Why would they want to kill them? Is it something about these animals? And it gives the impression that Moses knows some things And he know that what they're going to sacrifice is going to outrage the Egyptians to such a point to where they're now going to want to kill the Israelites. And up until this point, we know that one, Pharaoh did not know Jehovah. We also believe that the Egyptians served other gods. The Egyptians served other gods. We do not know the gods or the name of the gods, for Moses does not mention their names or give any impression of what they were, but based on the idol of the golden calf that we're going to read about in Exodus 32, it is believed they made the image based on what they had seen in Egypt. Now, we know that when the Israelites went into the land of Egypt, they were worshipers of the one true Elohim. They were not idol worshipers. We know that Abraham's family were idol worshipers, but after Abraham came into the knowledge of the one true Elohim, he taught his sons, he taught Ishmael, he taught Isaac, he taught the sons of Keturah, and then they taught their sons, for we saw that Isaac taught Jacob. Father revealed himself to Jacob as he was going to Laban after he had abandoned his homeland because of the situation between he and his brother Esau. And when he returned, and Father revealed himself or appeared to him as he wrestled with him, he told all of the people that they needed to wash their clothes, they needed to get rid of all their idols. And from that point on, we don't see Israel or his followers associating with any manner of idolatry. They spend 400 years in Egypt, and when they come out, and Moses, we're going to see, go into the mountain, they now want Aaron to make them a god. Now, Aaron takes the gold and he makes a god. And what does he make? He make a calf. Well, where did the idea of a calf come from as a god? There's only one place it could have come from, and this is where we reason. There's only one place it could have come from, and that was from what the children of Israel saw in the land of Egypt. Now, I'm being very careful here because there's a lot of information out there on the internet, and people can go online and they can read all kinds of stuff, and they want to associate all the plagues with some form of God that the Almighty, by doing these plagues, was actually destroying the idols or the gods that the Egyptians worshiped. But let's be honest with the scriptures. We have no idea what gods the Egyptians worshiped at this time in history. We have no idea. There is no indication. Moses doesn't mention them. Moses doesn't mention the name of them. He doesn't mention any kind of image of them. And so for individuals to do research today and then try to take that information all the way back into Egypt at this time is a perfect illustration of how eisegesis occurs. Instead of pulling out what is there, people read into it something that is not there. And we, as students of the Bible, have to be diligent that we don't be eisegetic, but exegetic. We don't read into it. We pull out what is there. And there is no indication that this stuff people are reading on the internet is actually occurring based on what is being presented or written. And we have to be careful that we don't go beyond what is written. Moses was afraid that the people would stone them if they saw them sacrificing. Now we know, what did the children of Israel sacrifice as far as animals? Bulls, cattle, rams, and that's sheep and goat. Bulls, rams, and goat, or sheep and goat. Those were the primary cattle, beasts that they sacrifice. Bulls, cattle, rams, which could be from the herd or the flock, or the sheep or the goat. And those were the actual beasts that the children of Israel sacrificed. And if this is what they were going to be sacrificing, for the Egyptians to see them sacrificing these, then it would be an abomination in the sense that it's not just a bad thing or an abominable thing or an unclean thing, to the sense that Moses was concerned that they would want to kill them or stone them to death. Verse 27. We will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to Jehovah Elohim as he shall command us. And Pharaoh says, I will let you go that you may sacrifice to Jehovah, your Elohim, in the wilderness. Only you shall not go very far away. So now Moses says, first you got to do it in the land. Pharaoh says, you got to do it in the land. Moses says, no, we will go 3 days journey into the wilderness. And he says, Pharaoh says, you shall not go very far. And then he uses this word, entreat for me. And this word, entreat for me, is basically, well, it means to pray, to supplicate. And what is he asking Moses to do? Go pray to your God that this plague will stop. This is what he's asking him to do. Now, Pharaoh has to know that he's up against a force that even his own magicians can't hang out with. And yet, Father is dealing with Pharaoh in such a way, and we're going to find out later why he hardened Pharaoh's heart. It wasn't just so he wouldn't let the people go, but he hardened his heart for a purpose, and it's revealed in Scripture why he hardened his heart, but we'll get to that. Once again, Pharaoh asked Moses to entreat or pray for him, and this time that the flies be removed. In verse 29, and so, and Moses says, behold, I go out from thee, and I will entreat Jehovah that the swarm of flies may depart from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people tomorrow. But Pharaoh, do not deal deceitfully anymore in not letting the people go to sacrifice to Jehovah. Now, Moses is saying this to Pharaoh, and yet Pharaoh's heart is hard, and he will harden it again. But he goes away and pray, and once again, Jehovah does what Moses asked, knowing that Pharaoh would not honor his word because his heart was hardened. And here's the thing, Father, when he gives his word, he's going to do what he say he's going to do. It's unfortunate that men will give their word and then not do what they say they're going to do. Verse 30, and Moses went out from Pharaoh and entreated Jehovah. And Jehovah did according to the word of Moses. Every time I see this, I think about the kind of relationship that Moses had, that he can go and ask Father to do something, and then Father do what Moses asked him to do. I find that interesting. And it's not just Moses. We find that when you look at Abraham, when Father promised him a son, he says, you know, you've given me all this stuff, but you have not given me a son. And then you look at Jacob, if you take me into that land, feed me, clothe me, take care of me, and bring me back, then I will give a tenth of everything to you. And Father honors his word. The Bible tells us his word, when it goes forth out of its mouth, it doesn't return unto him void. It accomplishes what he sends it out to accomplish. Father wants us to honor our word. He wants our yea to be yea, our nay to be nay. We don't have to go through all of this oath and all of this swearing and all this, you know, pinky swears and all kinds of stuff. Just say what you mean what you say. Say what you mean what you say. This is why you have to be careful. Don't let somebody make you promise stuff. And, you know, my wife and I, we were having a conversation, and I suspect that some of you all have seen some of these movies where people are dying and they say, promise me, swear, promise me. And you have people who are swearing or making promises to do something that in their heart they don't want to do. In their heart, they don't want to do it. And now it's as if they're bound by a promise or an oath they made to a person who is deceased. And I've purposed in my heart that is not fair for a person who is dying to make somebody swear to do something. Because now you're putting a person in bondage by doing that. Yeah. I know people do that, and they swear, you know. And so, like, I remember, well, folks do it. Folks do it. And brothers and sisters, that is something you got to really be mindful of, that what you're asking somebody to do is within their abilities to do it if you do, and certainly not something that they're unable to perform. And because people do it, don't necessarily make it right. So Moses went out from Pharaoh, verse 30, and entreated Jehovah. And Jehovah did according to the word of Moses. And he removed the swarms of flies from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people. There remain not one. Now, that swarm there, it's like it was heavy. It was such to where there were so many, the ground was covered. The air was covered. It was hard to see and distinguish anything because of the flies. And then in verse 32, it says again, and Pharaoh hardened his heart. Who hardened Pharaoh's heart? There are places where the Bible says the Almighty hardened Pharaoh's heart, but here again, Pharaoh hardened his heart, just as he did in the previous passage. He hardened his heart at this time also. Neither would he let the people go. And so, that's the end of our teaching today. A short teaching, obviously, but the point that I wanted to make here in this particular passage is that for the first time, Father makes a distinction between the land of Goshen and the rest of Egypt. And he makes a distinction between the Egyptians and the servants of the Egyptians and the Israelites who were servants of the Egyptians. So he makes a distinction between the Israelites and them as servants from Pharaoh, the Egyptian, and the other servants of Pharaoh.
Thank you for listening to our podcast today. You can find more inspirational teachings and download our free ebooks on our ministry website at arthurbaileyministries.com. Please follow us on Facebook at House of Israel-Arthur Bailey Ministries, on Instagram at Apostle Arthur Bailey, on Twitter at Apostle Bailey, and you can subscribe to our YouTube page at Apostle Arthur Bailey 1. If you're in the Charlotte area, please come and fellowship with us. We'll do our best to make you feel right at home. Our address is on our website at the About link under Contact Us. Again, thank you for joining us, and until next time, Shalom, Saints.